Okay. Thank you very much for giving me the occasion to talk today, and thank you all for coming, of course. So I will start writing the outline on what I'm going to say today. So, first point, I will state the final aim of all our effort, where our is the community of people doing this kind of calculations. Preliminary stuff that I will need during the talk. Then I will go to the core of the talk. I will present Medloop. I will tell you what Medloop is. I think that I will also have some time to speak about something that people like to hide, that is numerical instabilities, but it's very important. Basically, when you perform a calculation, you don't want to have problems with numerics. You want that your results is correct. So you have to deal with these kind of situations in a way or in another way. Of course, a way is to hide these kind of things, but this we don't like. And then I will speak about the big picture. What is the big picture, if it became clear now? Medloop is just a small piece of a more complex system of things that will allow you, that allows you to perform realistic calculations for relevant observables. Okay, so I would add here that just Medloop is just a small piece. Okay, first point, the final aim. So it's performing and error computations interfaced with partner shower for any theory for any process, where any process mean basically up to 2 to 4 and 5 particles in the final states automatically. So I have to comment on some of this point. So this is important, interfaced with partial shower, meaning also atomization effects. This is just due to the fact that experimentalists, they like to see pions in the final state, pions, kaons, hadrons, etc. So this is something that we should provide to them. Then any theory could be even something that a model builder thinks overnight, and then you should be able to put in your black box and to give prediction at the end for this kind of theory. Any process, I already commented about this. And automatically, what does it mean? It means that no human action is needed besides typing the process and making the final analysis and writing the paper at the end. This is our final aim, so you should please not laugh. Why? Because I'm trying to convince you during the talk that we are close to this situation. Please.
Actually, I'm surprised you put a limit on the number of final particles with all these other very ambitious goals. That seems to be the easiest one to relax.
Well, I want to be realistic here, right? So, of course, I could write this, okay, to 2n. If you prefer, okay, thanks, I will write to 2n. So, this is what we all aim to. Reference. So, reference for med loop first. It's a paper that we wrote recently. It is Hirschi, Frederick, Sione, Garzelli, Maltoni, and myself. And the archive number is 1103-06-21. You will not be able to escape some of the OPP. I prepared a special OPP corner for you, so I will also give reference for OPP, that is 07113596. This is the original OPP paper. I will also speak in connection of the loop of the implementation in a computer code of the OPP. This is CatTools. CatTools reference is this one, 06-09-007. I like the 007. And about numerical instabilities, I will make reference to a paper that I wrote 1 year ago, that is 10063773, okay? And this is basically something that will cover most of my talk. So you see, I'm already here, so preliminaries. Preliminaries, what we want to reach can be wrote in two lines. So we have to have tools, automatic tools, to compute this kind of object. This is SIMA NLO, cross-section or observables in general. And you know that it's composed of several pieces. You have an integral over an M space, M particle phase space, virtual contribution plus a contour term. Integrator over the phase space of the additional partum. Then you have phase space for one additional partum, the real contribution, and you have the unintegrated contour terms added here. Okay. But this is not enough. We want to interface this with parton shower. So what we really need are observables at hadron level. Schematically, this is your nested in order contribution folded with parton shower program, such like Erwin Kupitia. Of course, we prefer Herwig a lot with respect to Peter, since Brian is sitting here. And what is that? This is what I call the big picture. And I will come back to that at the end of my talk. During most of my talk, I will basically speak about the virtual part, how it is possible to compute this efficiently. We heard something from Kostas yesterday. I will present the solution of MedLoop to compute this kind of quantity. This is exactly what MedLoop does for you, is computing automatically this piece. Questions on this? Okay.
Maybe ask a question. So, what
is
your U on the
observer? This is a counter term that you...
How much it is solved?
Okay, I will come back to this. And this is... we will use... Okay, I can anticipate we use FKS, please. Christiane Kunstigner method to subtract and add the divergences from one piece to the other. This is what we are going to use. actually what we are using. So what is med loop? There is a simple equation that defines med loop. Med loop is med graph.
Professor?
Yes?
Non-renormalizable series part of your
DPG. What?
Non-renormalizable series part.
Well, I come back to that. Well, you can compute a QCD correction to any model, right? Even if it's not renormalizable, you can attach grounds everywhere. This is one thing that you can do. For a renormalizable theory, you cannot do NLO computation, of course. But for supersymmetry or electric models, this is what we are planning to do. So, med loop is med graph plus cut tools. Magraph is Magraph, everybody knows Magraph. It's very good in computing three-level amplitudes. And CatTool is a four-run code that implements the OPP method that I wrote on the OPP corner over there. So it is based on a simple observation. If you want to compute a one-loop amplitude for a process 2 to n, you have n particles here, and this is a one-loop amplitude that you want to compute, the virtual part of the one-loop amplitude, the loop part. This is equal in the med loop implementation to what? There is a sum of three amplitudes that I can schematically write like this. You have, this is a one-loop amplitude, it's a sum over three-level processes where you have 2 to n plus 2 additional legs that carry the integration momenta, q minus q, and that we level these extra particles with p and p star. This is redundant, so I will put a label, filtered. What does it mean this? This is a sum of all over the possible fields in your theory at hand. So you produce all three levels with two additional legs, and those two additional legs can be any pair that are present, that is present in the theory that you want to compute at one loop. You get much more diagrams than the diagrams that are here. This is known. Then you have somehow to filter this diagram. This is what this operation is doing for you. I will explain this to you. But the important thing is that if you have possibility of compute all three-level processes with two additional legs, you can reconstruct the one-loop amplitudes. And this is basically what med loop does for you.
This is not an amplitude, right? This is not an initial amplitude. Because this is a forward limit
in the initial amplitude. No, this is exactly an amplitude in the sense that...
It throws certain things away, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. This is the filtering that I will be going to speak about. Otherwise, you get much more diagram here.
Otherwise, it will be diverse, right?
Yes, of course.
This also includes ghosts.
Yes. For example, in QCD, I give you a list of these particles, PI and PI bar. I put an asterisk to these extra particles that I'm producing. In QCD, they could be just gluons, could be light quarks, heavy quarks, and ghosts. You would have all the list of all possible electroweak particles. Also gauge particles, everything. So then you have to have an efficient way of generating this amplitude with two more legs and filtering somehow in order to avoid double counting. And then from this, you can get your one loop amplitude. So, how does it work in practice? You have MagGov. MagGov is computing these objects. MagGov is very good in computing trees, so it's very efficient. So, and what actually it computes are those trees, just neglecting some propagators. And those trees without propagators are kind of numerator function that are needed in the OPP algorithm to compute diagonals. For example, it would generate this kind of tree with four denominators. If neglecting the denominators, this would be Q. This would be Q star in this case. So neglecting the denominators, it will provide a kind of numerator function as a function of the momentum integration that I call Q. This is the input for CAT tools. And CAT tools for this particular diagram or sum of diagram return the CAT constructible part of the Mohn-Lupin amplitude, the rational term that is linked to the CAT constructible part that Kostas yesterday called R1, and MagGraf also provides R2. This is the remaining part of the rational term that can be dealt with the Feynman diagrams, three-level Feynman diagrams. So MagGraf has already inside additional Feynman rules to compute R2. So the final output is the Mohn-Lupin amplitude. Provide I sum all over this kind of diagrams. Okay? This is the structure.
Can you go slowly here?
Slower, much slower than this.
Much slower than this, yeah. There is color, you know, this sort of thing. So what do you do in practice? Is this color ordered, not color ordered? Is this diagram?
Oh, diagram, you can do whatever you want. You could attach, like Kostas is doing, color labels here, for example.
Are you combining things with sort of long-range structures, or what do you exactly?
Well, we are doing stupid things at the moment with MagGraph 4, in the sense that we are not combining anything.
We've
got diagram by diagram at the moment. Okay? I have to.
It's not so stupid, because then it's easy to understand how things.
Yes, but it's slow. It is slow, but still reasonable speed. And so I should maybe tell you a little bit more about this filtering now. Okay. So are there other questions? Okay, if not.
By the way, the color is just normal color.
Normal color.
Normal color.
Well, you can also think of summing of the color before feeding. Okay.
But somehow MagGraph has a summation of the color.
Yes, this is what we do at the moment, is a summation of the color before. Okay. This is what we do in practice. What? Well, that
the interfere with the tree?
Yes, exactly. This is what we do. This is what we do. This interfere with the tree from the beginning. At the moment. Well, this is what we call is amplitude square 2 times this is Bohr. Sum of the color. Yes. Oh well, this can be done by Monte Carlo. There are two options at the moment. Done by Monte Carlo or at the very beginning.
You start to plot the diagram. And
yes.
Then you,
I multiply by. Exactly.
You just keep part of it, not to redo the calculation. So that's the filtering process.
No. The filtering is another story. The filtering. The filtering, I will explain you what is the filtering. Okay, let's try to be naive.
It's supposed to be a color-ordered diagram.
No. This is not color-ordered. You can do with color-ordered diagrams, of course.
Are those two lines adjacent?
Yes, exactly.
They're not adjacent.
No, it can be anything. I mean, it can be anything, sorry.
I think I need to interest you. A lot of double comments.
Yes, exactly. So let me give you an example of filtering. If you do naively, you get much more times than one the diagram that you need. For example, EQD. Let's assume that I want to compute this process at one loop in QAD. So, and I'm concentrating on this particular diagram, where I have a plus, a minus, a plus, a minus, something like this. I will count for you how many times I will get this diagram, just summing, performing the sum in an stupid way. So I have to one term of the sum will be with photons. So the special lines will be photons. So I will produce this kind of tree. And this kind of tree is something like this. Where those are the external lines, spatial lines that I call P and P star. And so I get this diagram like that, but I could also get this diagram like that. So these two spatial lines are actually linked to this photon and this photon, so I get this diagram that I want twice. Then, but I have to go all through the sum. So in my theory, I have photons, but I have also muons and electrons. So I have also to generate three-level diagram where these spatial two more external legs are muons. So this corresponds to this kind of trees. So those are now two monic lines, external lines, so I generate this diagram again. And of course, I have the last possibilities that my two external additional particles are electrons. And in this case, I'm generating the same diagram, just opening the loop here, in a sense. So I'm generating, going through all this summation, this kind of diagram 1, 2, 3, 4 times. So it's clear that I need a kind of filtering here in order this equation to be true.
Why? I don't understand. What do you mean? This equation to be true? This is a different diagram, right?
No, it's always the same diagram. It's opening here, opening here, opening here, opening here. It's the same diagram. No, it's not. I'm not speaking about cuts yet. I'm just generating a kind of topology.
But then this one is an off-shell.
This can be anything. No, okay. This is off-shell. This is off-shell. This is off-shell. I mean, in my point of view, this is just to generate the numerator function that I need to fill. So I can generate like this, like this, like this, like this, like this. Okay? It corresponds to the same numerator function with the loop open somewhere in several places. Okay?
You don't generate anchor, you generate current because the line is off-shell.
Yes, yes, exactly. Those are not on-shell, are off-shell. Okay? So I need a mechanism that filters these kind of things for me in order to generate this kind of diagram just once. So what is done in the loop is the following. Oops, these offshore currents have always this kind of form. This is the Q line, and this is the Q star lines. Those are the two additional lines here that I open. And I will also always have three-level currents attached. I'm just writing an example. Now you can also have four particle vertices like this. So I have a three-level current here, a three-level current that I call T2, a three-level current that I call T3 here. This is one of my extra particles. This is the other one that I label with the same number of the integration momentum Q. Here I have a propagator for a particle, P1. I have a propagator for another particle that I call P2. I put an asterisk on all particles running in the loop. For example, in this example, all these particles that run in the loop would have an asterisk. Okay, what the loop does is blindly going to this kind of summation.
It's not necessarily two particles with asterisks, right? I mean, it can be.
Well, it can be anything. Can be anything. I'm just giving an example with three currents. The important thing is that internally in metal loop, this kind of structure is labeled like this. It's labeled like U star, T1, P1 star, T2, P2 star, T3, and Q star. Let's say that the first time that in this big loop, metal loop encounters this kind of structure, it has an internal representation to recognize that this is the label of the diagram. Okay? So what can happen? Can happen that this diagram happens again while doing this summation. I just showed this. But of course, it can appear in a different kind of permutation. You can understand that if I follow this chain starting from P2, it will be always the same diagram, because I'm just following the same kind of loop. And for example, this configuration is equivalent to another kind of diagram that you can obtain from this by cyclic permutation of the structure. For example, the cyclic permutation P2, P2 star, T3, Q star, T1, P1 star, T2, P2 star is equivalent to this. You are just looking the loop. The loop diagrams are cyclically Thanks. But there is another symmetry. You can go the other direction if there are no fermions. So you have also a mirror symmetry. If they are not fermions, for example, if they are gluons, there is also a mirror symmetry. And so the permutation, mirror permutation on this is still equivalent. So the diagram Q star T3 P2 star T2 P1 star, T1, Q star, bar, for example, is always the same diagram. So Magrath, what it does is it keeps the first ordering that it encounters. When during the summation meets this or that, it discards that. Okay. So,
how is this coded up? Is this your Python?
It's this is complicated, but this is a way to match this kind of topology in a variable.
This is what, Fortran, right?
It's Fortran, yes.
It's Fortran?
Yes, Fortran.
Oh, okay.
So it's Fortran 77, actually, yes. Well, you can do Chalapter, merging Chalapter.
Aren't the T1, T2 very complicated objects? I mean, there can be arbitrary trees.
Yes, exactly. Of course. At the moment, we are doing this diagram by diagram, but of course, ILAP is doing this. It's computing these trees through the Karsh relations. So in principle, you compute this tree through the Karsh relations. We are not linked to the Feynman diagram based.
Sorry, the question is, how do you recognize when you come to some other diagram with the same tree?
You should have a way to recognize this. At the moment, it just recognizes through topologies. Okay. If you want to do with currents, can be slightly more complicated, but you can do it.
This is done at the level of topology or at the level of actual computation?
No. Magrath, as you know, is a metacode. So Magrath produced for you a Fortran code, And so this is doing just during the construction of the code.
So it's in the construction
phase? It's the construction. There is just one initial phase. You run in your laptop Megra for 10 hours, 20 hours.
Because some questions before about the bin of cell or bin on cell, this card has nothing to do with it.
No.
It's just
Produce the Fortran code where this kind of filtering is performed once for all. You run it and you get what you should get, hopefully. Okay. It depends on the complexity of its computation, but it could be thousands. Well, we are running this, actually. I don't know by heart, but 10,000s or the other 10,000s. Well, actually, you have one of these structures per Feynman diagrams, in principle. Right? So it's equivalent to the number of Feynman diagrams, unless you are clever enough to put diagrams together or classify them in order together with the three-level structure or something like this. But it's actually the number of Feynman diagrams.
Roberto, this is just equivalence classes when you have the Q to be some flavor, let's say gluon. But you saw before that it can be cut on the Fermion line. So this is still the same graph.
Yes, this is what I showed you, exactly.
Yeah, but you also summarize that, right? Because normally if you just generate
Yes.
You're not very efficient. That's a more efficient way to get the numerator function.
Yes, this is a way to get the numerator fashion in an efficient way without going through topologies. You are not going through topologies like this.
We have Q graph, which is a lot of Romanov diagram, which is not a very efficient way, that's a more efficient way, because you need to...
Yes, exactly. Yes.
You can try to combine Feynman diagrams with more or less the same.
Well, you can do this. This will be done in Megra 5, okay? This is what I tell you is done in Megra 4. You know that since a month or so, there is Megra 5 out. Then you have much more flexibilities there to put things together. And also, importantly, you can cache the numerical values of these trees. Why do I want to cache this? Because this is independent on the integration momenta. When I call the OPP equations, I have to call this equation a lot of times a difference value of Q. So you better cache whatever you don't doesn't depend on Q. So this will be also put in Megra 5. So we expect a gain of speed of the order of more than 10. Just doing that, no fancy things, okay?
And you said that you calculate interference with the tree?
Well, you can do several things, depending on how you do the color. You can just compute the pure one-loop amplitudes like that. Or if you want to sum all over the color, you have each of the structure, you already compute the sum over color of the interference between the three-order result and the one-loop result. There are several options. This is the tree, all the other diagrams, all the Born. No, this is the normal Born, yes. This is the Born for this process, would be just 1 to 2 Born level, 1 to n Born level. This is A0, okay? This is the amplitude for this, and I take 2 times the real part of this, and this is the object that I compute like this. I can decide to compute to multiply by the Born diagram by diagram, or at the end, depending on what you have to do.
Sorry, Robert, again, but I don't understand. I mean, this, what you say, is the symmetry, the cyclic, and the mirror, etc.
Yes.
This is easily implementable. How you do now with the different...
The fermions.
Yes.
Well, with the fermions, either you... In the fermion, we discovered that you can...
Same graph, for yes. The same loop graph, you have many...
Ah! No, at the moment we... Sorry.
With extra to quarks or trees with extra things again. So from different, let's say...
If they are different, you will come...
Keep only one of them.
Well, we are doing stupid things. For example, if there are different U-quarks or D-quarks massless, we consider them to be different and we sum all over them instead of putting number of flavors in front of one of them.
The example you gave before.
Yes.
I think what he says is that he's...
Yeah, keep just the first one.
...a function for each diagram by selecting one cut, essentially.
So I just keep one, and the other, when they occur in this sum, I discard, and I keep...
But if it is only just the symmetry of... But if this line is a different line now, if it is not gluon, it is quark, for instance.
It doesn't matter.
It's the same. It's the same story. If you have a quark line...
But the T1 and T2, T3, they're not anymore the same.
understand.
Of course, and then there can be something else, and it will.
How the program recognizes that? This is kind of.
Well, it knows that the structure where this is a quark, it's just attached to T1. If Descartes does this again, it will discard. I mean, it's not ambiguous. It's just like a Feynman diagram. So it's not different from a Feynman diagram. So if it is there already, you throw it away. If it is not there, you keep it. This is the idea.
No,
okay, maybe you can discuss later. I don't get exactly what you want to say.
Just need a way of coding those T's.
Yes, exactly.
Which is not obvious, but probably you can do it.
Yes, it's true. This is what Hadoop does. So, then this is the way how actually you can deal any kind of calculation for the virtual part. So, for example, you know that,
And loop tools operates on a Fortran 77 expression for the numerator?
Well, we had interaction with loop tools guy, but well, in principle, what they do is performing algebra in order to use Passarino-Belzmann decomposition.
Well,
cut tools.
Ah, sorry.
Cut tools,
the only thing that it needs is just a numerical a function to know this function as a function of Q numerically.
But it's not Fortran 77. It's Fortran.
This is Fortran 90. Yes, it's Fortran 90.
Not any Feynman diagram numerator. The reduction.
Okay. So no problem. So for example, Magraph has several BSM model implemented inside. So if one wants to compute, for example, QCD correction to BSM models, one can use what is already inside Magraph. Yes?
Which level to infer where one particle reducible
there? Well, for example, well, we don't throw them away, actually. We include in the sum. Unless they are, if they are external,
yeah,
if they are external, okay, we don't include them, and we put the wave function normalization by hand. So when we generate them, we throw them away. If we recognize that they are just wave function normalization, and we put by hand. Of course, this is not Gauge invariant. I'm not claiming that we are keeping Gauge invariance here. But the nice thing that you can do this in a generic way, with independently on the masses, internal or external masses, completely automatizable to any renormalizable theory. So. And the idea? Exactly. They are encoded. Okay. For the moment, the R2 Feynman rules are put by hand in Magraph. By hand, okay. The QCD one. Now. We are working at an automation of the computation of these Feynman rules. You know that Magraph is also a kind of way of automatically computing Feynman rules from the Lagrangian, right? So, and then you can get, in principle, the needed R2 Feynman rules for the given Lagrangian automatically, but not at the moment, but this is for the future. And it will belong to the big picture that I'm going to speak in a minute. But the idea is that at the end, of course, this is the weak point of this kind of algorithm in a sense, but still you have a piece that you have to do by hand. It's true that it's just like a finite renormalization, these are two, but still you have to give, you have to extract some Feynman rules from this, and you have to know these Feynman rules that are just three-level Feynman rules up to four legs, but still you have to know them in order to provide the rules in order to complete your result.
Sorry, I'm confused now. The renormalization counter terms are there, no?
Yes. Yes, okay. We implement the renormalization and they are.
They are two, I mean the normal ones.
The normal ones are also there, of course. Yes.
Can you generate them as well?
At the moment, no, but they will be automatically generated. This is the idea, okay?
R2 is not
Gauge invariant. And this is also, well. Okay, I will tell you a bit more about this.
Do you keep these epsilons around?
Well, we keep the epsilons around. This is just... but of course, at one loop, you could just forget about this and at the end you recover the result in the Toft-Feynman gauge at the end. Well, it's not difficult to keep because they are embedded in these extra Feynman rules, because all the epsilon terms are in R2. So it depends on how you write your extra Feynman rules. It will belong to one normalization scheme or another normalization scheme. All depends on the normalization scheme is in R2. Okay. Then I explain you, I hope, what MedLoop does. I want to speak a bit about numerical instabilities. Numerical instabilities are always there, especially when you compute the virtual part or the correction. So, and they are, for example, due to the currency, to the occurrence of inverse time determinant. So one has to have a way of detecting this kind of numerical instabilities. So what we do, we have a way to assign an error given to numerical instabilities. For example, if you go to the original MedLoop paper, in the original MedLoop paper, we present results where we compute this part with MedLoop, but also all the other part with the MedGraph and MedFKS. So we give in MedLoop results for possession of this kind of complexity. So for example, we give the NLO cross-section for the process PP going to WJJ, just to name one. And we compute something like this. This is the Monte Carlo error. And we also attach an estimate of the error due to the numerical instabilities. How do we do that? Again, this is a very technical point, but it's very important, because if this number is of the order of 200, of course your result is completely wrong. So this is, in this case, for example, it's a small percentage of the Monte Carlo integration error. So how can we do this? We use the fact that this kind of techniques allow you to have a way to detect this kind of numerical instabilities numerically, because they are numerical methods. So in this respect, numerical methods have the advantage that they will tell you if a numerical instability is over there, just computing the same things into different ways. For example, you can somehow change a bit the OPP way of solving, so the way of solving the OPP equation, for example, choosing other solutions to extract the coefficient instead of the set that you used before, and getting the same answer with a different kind of computation. So at the end, the result should be the same up to numerical instabilities.
Do you have to do a complete recomputation to see this?
Well, the point is that we use the fact that once you know the right part of this, you can define a reconstructor numerator that is a much simpler function. You can use the reconstructor numerator function in order to redo the fit instead of using, again, the diagram. So this is cheap in terms of computing. So once you have reconstructed, use the reconstructed version to refit the coefficient in another way. This is what we do. And a way to, for example, assessing the importance of the numerical instabilities is computing the coefficient of the loop function, for example, the set of the coefficient of the box, the triangles, the bubbles, the tuples, and R1. And this is what is returned by cut tools. Cut tools return this kind of object. We compute, just change slightly the way we extract this coefficient. So I will get another set of coefficient, prime, and also R1 prime. Numerically, they should be the same, but since I'm using a different algorithm to compute them, numerically they differ. So I can compute the amplitude using the original set of coefficients that would be a combination of boxes, triangles, all the rest. I can compute another amplitude, where now I'm using the new set of coefficients that multiply the same box, for example, but just the coefficients are different.
So, correctly, so you do it for the full.
Yes, at the end.
Okay, so first you calculate in one way.
Yes.
Using the final value.
Yes.
And you calculate separately yes. The reconstructed
yes.
Expression from the first method.
Yes.
Much faster than
yes.
The second set.
And then I check.
For the full length.
And I check if this is true. If this is not true, this is a problematic space point. And I recompute this in multi-precision because internally in CAD tools we have double all the routines. We have all routines in normal precision and routines in multi-precision up to 64 digits or whatever.
And computing A prime is less than about a few percent of computer time.
Well, to compute this coefficient depends on how you do this. It's 30% of the time. Yeah, something like this. And then you have an handle. When this is not true, it means that you have met a phase space point. Then for this particular phase space point, you can use multi-precision routine that are much slower, but you do just for a small percentage of points.
What I don't understand is as the process becomes much more complicated, the number of unstable points grows very rapidly.
Yes.
So how do you deal with that? You can't be doing, you know, most of the points at multi-precision.
Well, there are several options. You can either redo the calculation in multi-precision. This is okay up to this process, so we didn't meet.
No, but higher you can't do that.
Well, you can do something else. You can slightly modify your phase space for the bad points. When this is not fulfilled, you call this phase space point to be a nasty phase space point. And then you can, for example, do other things. You can modify a bit the kinematics, be on shell, and then recompute the cross-section again, and then you get another A prime, and then you can estimate this error, for example, just taking delta A. And you can do point by point in phase space, so you have a way of estimating this. Of course, you can meet a very dangerous situation where this is a very large error, but at least you know that you should do something else. Well, it's very, very, let's say, less than 1% usually.
Less than
1%.
Do you see this effect that, you know, you actually reconstruct with these D-fats and C-fats and D-fats that you actually do when you reconstruct D0, C0, B0? Does this effect exist? Do you see this?
Which fact?
So you have this D0
yes.
And
yeah.
D-fat or whatever.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes.
And. Is it true that you often reconstruct D hat and C hat worse than you actually?
Yes, but I don't care because I'm using here the fact that the only knowledge.
You don't care.
I don't care.
See this effect.
Well, I see this effect in the sense that I have also another test that I implement that this reconstructed denominator should be equal to the original one computed at any value of Q. So we are also using this, and sometimes we see that the reconstructed ones are very bad, but the coefficients are still good.
Is the reconstructed one just the one without the hat ones?
No, the reconstructed ones is defined to be what is here.
These hats integrate to zero.
These are total derivatives. They integrate to zero.
So I ask whether the reconstructed one is the one without them.
No, the reconstructed one is exactly defined by the right-hand part of this equation. You have 5/4 terms here for, you have 5/3 terms for the triangle in this case, and then you sum up all together after the fitting, and you get the reconstructed version. Then you can do for any point Q prime, you compute the diagram, let's say, and then the reconstructed version of the numerator function of this diagram at the value of Q, and then those two numbers should be numerically equivalent. Yes.
Can you also verify numerically the gauge independence?
Yes, we tried these kind of things.
Which precision typically can you do that?
Well, usually the gauge test is related to this. Okay, but we don't want to perform the gauge test each time because it's time consuming. So we perform, for example, at the very beginning of the calculation for the first 10 points in order to be sure that the process we compute is correct and should fulfill gauge invariance. But we don't want to rely on this point by point. So that's why we prefer a kind of other test like this. Good, 5 minutes for giving you the big picture. So this is more or less how NetLoop works, how we deal with numerical instabilities. What is the big picture? The big picture is this picture here, that fortunately I didn't delete. So, using this kind of tools, we want to perform realistic calculations in the sense that is written here. So, for this, we use matloop. As I already mentioned, to subtract and add back the divergences in the virtual, in the real part, we use matfks. That is based on Frictione Kunst Signer subtraction algorithm. For this, we use the MC at NLO method in order to merge nestled order cross section with Parton-Schauer hybridization. And how the different parts talk to each other? They talk to each other through the Binot Jesusa code. The Binot Jesusa code is an accord how the virtual part of the calculation should speak with the real part of the calculation, according to some accord that was taken in 2009 in Lesouche. So this is a kind of a way of writing the files with the event in order the two parts of the calculation to be able to understand each other. And again, this is called the big picture. And we call the all this picture that is already existing. This is matloop. I just described this piece. But all the other pieces are also automated. So MCTNLO is well known. You can do this. MetFKS is automatic, and you have this automatic way somehow to make all the part of the calculations speak together. And we call all this kind of picture A, MC, and NLO, where A stands for automatic. So it's really a framework where if everything goes smooth, where the point where it cannot go smooth maybe could be, for example, numerical stability, or the fact that you are making some error in somewhere in this step, but you can fix it. But the idea is that to make it as automatic as possible, such a way that once I fix all the errors or the problems that I have, I really can just input the process. Yes, sure. Yes. Well, it is not automated. It is now automated. So there's the idea that this A stands for the fact that now, thanks to the work of Putin. Yes. No, it's not in matloop, exactly. Matloop is just this part, okay? And so this is a kind of framework, and this is the web page for this, that is a... This is a web page where we are putting results that has been obtained with this framework. We already computed PP or PP bar going to HTT in this framework. Tomorrow in the archive there will be a paper on BBB at NLO with Parton-Schauer, with everything, with the pions in the final state using these kind of things. We are also working on ZZ, and we have also result for WJet. How many jet we can do, we don't know yet, to be honest. We have to see how this will survive. Right? This could be a bottleneck. We don't know yet.
The number of the diagrams is also growing.
Well, the number of the diagrams is not something that really, I think it's worrying, because if we are clever enough to cache the information or the external current that don't depend on Q, then this is more or less straightforward. But okay, in practice we have to see how much this will survive, for example, an additional NestorJet. We don't know yet. And another thing that we would like to do is to see if this kind of framework survives, for example, electroweak corrections, because one has to bear in mind that At the moment, no electroweak calculation has ever been performed with this kind of techniques. There is no single electroweak calculation at one loop performed with this unitarity or OPP techniques. So it's still unclear if electroweak will be doable with this kind of techniques. But in principle, there is no limitation. So this is what we are going to study. So we would like to expand this kind of automatic computation to, as I was saying, to any theory, any process with a reasonable number of external particles in such a way that everything is done automatically. That is not only because we want to do automatic, but because it's much more safe to do, it's safer to do this automatically than to do this by hand. For example, during the development of this, we found a lot of problems in MCFM. So when comparing phase space point with MCFM, we found problems, and usually all the problems were not in our automatic calculation, but they were somewhere else, because when you do a calculation by hand, you do mistakes, okay? So the philosophy is that automation is not just for the fun of it, but it's also a safe way to proceed. And I think I'm done. Another important issue for us is to make it public. I'm thinking here on the experimental colleague that wants to use these tools in order to analyze the data. So it's good to write papers, but it's also good to write these programs and to make them public in order to help experimental colleague to analyze the LSE data. Okay, I'm done. Thanks for your attention.
I guess it's should be clear to people that it doesn't quite factorize your last line there, sigma n l o.
Of course.
Carlo, because
of course, it's you have to use.
Terms have to be modified.
Yes, yes. That's why.
A switch to tell it to do that.
Yes, exactly. You should be careful. It's not that you just plug in Herwig, and you should not to overcount things in order to do something, to order something in Herwig.
So one of the problems we have in general is how to communicate the data. I mean, in other, let's say, calculations, okay, between the real and the virtual part. So you do unweighting, or it's just weighted events?
It's weighted events.
So therefore, big defiles will appear. You know.
Well, we have one. Well,
I mean, if you go to more legs, I mean, okay, because now you are at three legs level.
Yes.
Okay, kind
yes.
of.
Yes.
First of that.
Well,
go to another level of complexity, then becomes much, much more.
Well, but for example, you can use Binot-Lesuch accord on the fly, for example.
Yeah, but this weighted event, because that's important.
Then you generate unweighted events in the end for the analysis, and for the unweighted events, we use 1 million events. So the unweighted events that we use
after
everything, we have unweighted events.
Them set in the low level.
Yes. Yes.
With part of Charlie.
Yes. Yes. At the end, yes. For the analysis, we just store a bunch of events and perform all the histograms on the basis of this. But during the phase of communication, well, we have separated files or weighted events, and then we unweight them.
So therefore, you keep weighted events in all stages until you...
Well, at the moment, yes, this was not a problem. Maybe increasing...
What is the philosophy? You will keep them until you go to this...
Yes, yes, yes.
Low, and then in sentinel the low, you'll do the unweighting.
Yes, yes, exactly.
But of course, when you unweight in MCFM low, the weights are plus or minus one.
Yes, we have a negative.
It happens for some complicated process, you get so many minus ones that you're numerical.
Okay, I have also a comment, but I don't know if I have time. This is about the stability, the numerical stability issue. The numerical stability, I think, is more general. Okay, they exist everywhere.
Sure.
It has to do not really with anything, it's just you approach the singularity. So there are not singularities there. There is just the fact that there is a numerator and denominator which should cancel, and you have a finite answer.
Yes.
There is nothing special, it's just the fact that when you approach this point and you have something which is very small in the denominator,
yes,
you should get good calculation in the numerator.
Yes, yes.
So therefore, in principle, it's just a matter of, our experience from Kellogg is not that you have so big problem with that. It's the fact that
you estimate the
volume, let's say the contribution of this area to the cross-section. And usually the contribution of this areas, let's say, of this phase-based volume to the cross-section is small.
Yes, but if you tell people, I generated 1 million events and I have been throwing away 4 events, they will tell you, this was the Higgs signal that you threw away, right? So you should also, what I mean is that it's not the volume is just that.
No, this is technical. I mean, there's not anything.
Well, I wouldn't like to call this technical cut, because if you tell I'm throwing away events.
I don't put any cut. You don't need to put any cut. I mean, I'm saying.
Well, if you're throwing away, if you're throwing away an event, you're putting a cut. That's what I'm saying. I don't want to. We are not throwing away any point here.
So I'm telling you that there is no way that you cannot. I can give you a point where you have to throw it even if you use the best multi-precision you have in your mind.
Well, this will...
such a point.
You'll never land there.
No.
Sorry?
But you'll never land.
That's what I'm saying. Therefore, it's not that there is not such a point. It's that to estimate what is the probability
yes,
of the volume of the space, okay?
Well, this is a way. This is a way.
So it's not that... I mean...
No, but I will say that this problem becomes more severe as you go to much larger numbers yes. of particles.
I can imagine this. For example...
The amount of times you hit
in the OPP method, if I can just add one.
No problem. Yes. I agree with Roberto.
There are nasty points where the cut constructible part, 9 digits. R1, 9 digits. But unfortunately, the same 9 digits with a minus sign. So you are losing a lot of precision in the when you are summing cut constructible plus rational part. This we meet several times. So there.
I'm telling you that theoretically there is a point in phase space which you cannot do anything with any precision you have in mind. So
well, then you can deform a bit. I would deform this.
The volume at that point is zero, right?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. The volume for this, the cross section is zero.
Yeah, but that's not the relevant. The relevant problem is there a practical issue here? And
how many issues?
And there is a practical issue. I agree with
yes.
you.
Yes, but we should not exaggerate that. I mean, you can solve it.
Well, this is a way to solve it. I'm not claiming anything else.
Let's see.
Short question. In your big picture, you have two lines, and if I understand you correctly, in the first line you're using also some Monte Carlo integration.
Yes, yes.
In the second part, obviously, you use a lot of Monte Carlo.
Yes.
I mean, do you do this serially or do it parallelly?
Well, we first have generate events at this stage, and then we feed Herwig with these events afterwards. This is what we do.
So. Could you maybe gain something if you try to do this parallelly?
Yes, of course. Well, I think that is not so much. There is no need for parallelization between this and this usually because this is much faster. I think once you have the events, you can shower them afterwards. So the parallelization, it's good here. If you have a lot of subprocesses, of course, you may want to parallelize this in a cluster. This is actually what we do. Actually, we use cluster for this kind of calculation. And then several subprocesses are running separately, and then we collect everything at the end.
So if I look at this in the big picture of automatized one-loop calculations, this is just based on a traditional finite element approach.
Well, except the caveat that this can be three-level currents,
yeah,
but yes,
basically.
Yes, basically.
So have you thought of comparing it with just? So this is just a different way to reduce.
Yes. In this respect, yes.
So,
right. Just a pretty way of
doing the test reduction. That's have you compared to doing it with the other method of reducing the integral set based on Feynman-Dyrum approach?
I wouldn't do myself because I don't want to reduce rank 6's point functions. But if somebody from the other group of the world would like to, well, usually, you know, the answer is very easy because usually programs with normal Feynman diagrams reduction pastoralement are much faster, usually. But thus it takes much longer to produce such a calculation. Well, here can we can. I mean, they usually it's 1 year of a student city.
So not based on Feynman diagrams, then it's a different story. But since this is based,
well, look, historically, to produce TTBB with the normal Feynman diagrams, it takes 1 year of work by Stefano Pozzorini, for example. No, we didn't do that. What I'm saying is that we can easily produce another process, maybe not very fast code, but in zero time because it's completely automatic. You just type in and you get it. Who cares if it is slower?
To type in, but then.
Maybe I can make a comment because Costa sent us yesterday, right? That the algebraic path. The question is that, let me eliminate this algebraic path.
This is the way.
There is no algebraic path. The only thing is, I think that is a difference somehow. And that there is an algebraic path of the path.
But I don't understand this comment. If you go diagram by diagram, for each single final diagram, Poisson Waldman is a very well-defined procedure. If you are in a non-exceptional phase space quantum, it takes less than 20 hours in a laptop, I suppose, to process a single final diagram using Poisson Waldman reduction, right? So you go into this construction called phase, you do it automatically, then you press a button and you calculate diagram after diagram after diagram.
Yes, you can do it.
So I suppose it should be exactly the same.
The standard
argument was that we don't want to do this because we keep this ground determinant business very, very fast. Robert is saying this is not a problem at all.
The ground determinant, I agree most of it, but the ground determinant is a bigger problem.
It's a golem, for example. What I'm saying that historically, the possibility of writing a new process in a week just because of this method and because we are trying to automatize everything. The point is that, can you automatize also Passarino-Wellman? Yes.
Automatize the other direction too.
Yes. If you ask Stefano Pozzolini, he will tell you that they are automatizing this. So why not? I'm not against it. They can automatize it.
The other question I have is just when you have a, wouldn't it be kind of desirable to interface something like MATLAB not only with MCF and Logic, but
yes, actually this big picture has all pieces are independent modules. So in principle, one could just take out MATLAB and put ELAC, or to do the same with the real part, instead of using FKS, could use another program just taking care of this. The idea is that this is really something that you can play with. Yes, this is what we do. For example, you can put MCFM here for the virtual part and go through the same procedure. This is something that we plan to do. This is the philosophy.
Then you can't do MCFM alone, MCFM, unless you get in and mutilate the code by
Pohack. Yes, in principle, you could put Pohack here instead. Yes. It's modular.
It doesn't go automatically for many legs. It's going to be very difficult.
Pohack or what? Whatever. The big picture, you mean, or Pohack?
Pohack for many legs.
I agree. That's why we are staying with MC Eternal. Yes. You choose.
That was text.
Yes.
So in your paper, you have the same calculation of Higgs production together with, I don't know, 1/0, 2/0 or something like that.
TT bar.
No, in this first paper where you have a big table.
Ah, yes, this was just cross section, yes.
Higgs plus jet?
Yes, plus 2/0.
This is my problem, which I don't understand. I ask you about this in the context of non normalizable interactions. I mean, Higgs is produced by your Higgs.
Yes.
This is not a normalizable interaction.
Yes. You mean that this was produced by Higgs with defective vertices, I believe? Yes. You can have corrections here. In MSCFM, they have general corrections.
But I think this parameterization will not work.
Look, I modified OPP for this. I didn't use that. You should allow a rank higher. Okay. It's possible. I did it. Well, for the moment we are touching decays here by hand, three-level decays. Of course, what you should do is the complete things. Well, we know that the interference effects are usually small. Well, you could also attach NLO decays, but we don't do that yet for the moment. I don't know. I mean, we have so many things to try that I don't know if it would be the first priority, but what I'm saying is that for the moment we have touched three of the case in order to do some phenomenology.
Right, but then you should have an argument. Why, for example, doing phenomenology without corrections to the decays is better than doing phenomenology with corrections to the product?
Yes, okay, I agree.
Do you think so?
okay.
So maybe I ask a question. Yes. It is fully automated, and MedGraph is also works of supersymmetric.
Yes.
So maybe we could do one of the very supersymmetric calculation by supersymmetric. Did you think about that?
Well, of course, we are tending to this. We are tending to this. This was my initial statement and also final statement. But we have to go step by step. But there is no.
But that would be a huge psychological applications.
Look, but okay, I have a comment on this because if you write a paper, it's time consuming because you have to generate. Apart from running, you have to do an analysis. So, personally, I'm more interested in making public because we should spend some time in this.
So then, thanks very much again.
Thank you.